I just feel really inspired by the artists that are happening now. There's so many records that are coming out by either like non-binary or female artists that I just think like that's where I want to put my focus is the inspiration. And it's really helped me with feelings of insecurity and fear because I do feel them. I feel scared of how aging will treat me. You know, I know that that's a really painful process when you're in this industry. And I have my fear, but I just have really chosen to believe again in this feeling of there is community out there and that's where the gold is, and shift my ideas of what success means. Success to me means having a lot of peers that I'm just like, wow, you blow my mind. And I hope I can write a song as good as that one someday. And then like egging each other on to just keep searching and to keep growing.
That was Alinda Segarra, a.k.a. Hooray for the Riff Raff. And this is Sheeros, a podcast with a mission. To turn up the volume of women's voices in music across genres and generations, Sheeros is a deep dive into the experiences and perspectives of women and gender-expansive folks in a still overwhelmingly male-dominated music industry. It's a space where we discuss challenges and triumphs, how far we've come, and how far we still have to go. Telling our stories is the first step to making music better for everyone. Born and raised in the Bronx, musician, singer, songwriter, and producer Alinda Segarra left home at 17, hitchhiking and freight train hopping their way across the country, joining up with hobo band Dead Man Street Orchestra for 2 years before finally landing in New Orleans. They formed Hooray for the Riff Raff in 2007 and self-released their debut EP, Crossing the Rubicon, that same year. Alinda put out an album nearly every year for the next 6 years as Hooray for the Riff Raff, and their breakthrough came in 2014 with their fifth full-length studio album, Small Town Heroes, now marking its 10th anniversary. With their critically acclaimed 2016 album, The Navigator, Alinda dug deep to reclaim their ancestral Puerto Rican heritage, and in 2022, their self-described nature punk album, Life on Earth, arrived. In today's conversation, Alinda will share their journey with us and some of the stories that they're finally ready to share as memoir-style songs for their new album, The Past Is Still Alive. Also, how these songs and recording of the album took on a whole new meaning following the sudden passing of their father. I'm thrilled to welcome back Alinda Segarra, a.k.a. Hooray for the Riff Raff, to the Sheeros Spotlight. Alinda Segarra, welcome back to Sheeros.
Thanks for having me. I feel like I'm home.
I'm doing like a little dance, a little happy dance. Holy shit, so much has happened. We have a lot to catch up on in a short amount of time. First and foremost, I'm going to say the thing that everybody's saying to you. Congratulations on this amazing 9th album, The Past Is Still Alive.
Yeah, it's been a really amazing experience so far. I really love this record, and I feel like it resonates with people in a way that's very new for my experience of putting out records. So it's cool to see.
Why do you think that that might be?
Well, I definitely think this is the most vulnerable I've been in my writing in a really long time. I think since I first started writing songs, I was doing a lot of exploring outside of myself and looking at the world and looking at issues and places and things that I thought we could work on as like human beings. And as much as I love all of that type of writing, this is a record that is really stripped me down to the bone, you know, with everything that surrounded it in my personal life. And I just think it's a lot of very tender themes of grief and growth and loss and, you know, all of these human experiences. So I think that's what it is.
I was reading a bunch of the amazing pieces, by the way, that have been coming out in the wake of your release or right before the release of The Past Is Still Alive. And one of them was telling the story of how you know, the album came to be, and it talked about you being out on tour with Connor Oberst.
Yeah.
And that you were kind of in a moment, you and everyone else was like, I don't know what the fuck is going to happen. Like, maybe I don't have a career anymore.
Definitely.
And that freed you up in this certain way. I mean, this is just one slice of the story, right? But I'm
for
just
sure.
teeing you up here. That freed you up in a way, too. And I love that this far in to feel that kind of freedom, even though it's like from a holy shit, I don't know what's going to happen place, too.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for when you truly feel like this is the only thing you know how to do. You know, like
yeah.
if there's one thing I've never questioned, it's that this is what I'm supposed to do with my time on the planet. I know that this is my calling and songwriting is what I'm supposed to do and it's what I love to do. But what I started to question was, am I too sensitive for this industry? And am I too sensitive for this world? You know, I just started to feel like, well, I know this is what I'm supposed to do, but I don't know if I can handle it anymore. And that was really scary because, like I said, I don't know how to do anything else. So there's nowhere to go but inward at that point, you know, when everything outside of myself felt so out of my control. I felt like I was making the best, most truthful art that I could. And, you know, I had a moment where I was like, well, there's nowhere to go but deeper into the writing, deeper into the song. And I was very exposed. And I think I learned a lot from that experience. It was humbling. And it was also like, really, it's been so nourishing to get this type of love and connection from being that exposed.
So you were writing while you were out on tour, which is also somewhat new for you, I think, right?
For sure. Tour is normally, again, being a sensitive person, like just
Pisces. Normal,
totally. Like just a Pisces in a van being like, I just got to make it through being this perceived for mm-hmm. months at a time. And I got to mm-hmm. try to sleep as much as I can. But while we were on tour opening up for Bright Eyes, I had a lot more free time. You know, being an opening band is just a really great gig in a lot of ways that you can be done at an earlier time. And also I was watching this very important songwriter every night, this incredible band, and also like a band that are friends and have been friends forever, and it's like a family. It was just the perfect supportive environment for me to be in at that time in my life. And watching the band every night, listening to that lyricism every night, really inspired me, and it reminded me of where I was supposed to go.
Was there anything that ended up on the final product of The Past Is Still Alive that came from that period?
For sure. World Is Dangerous. That's why I wanted Connor to sing on it, because okay. I think the lyricism is very inspired by him. That's a song where I was like, I just want there to be little twists and turns, little turns of phrases and wording that you weren't quite expecting. That was like the nerdiness that I went into that was really fun, because I'm just like a lyric freak. I love lyrics. Sometimes I'm like, wait, what does the song sound like? You know, because I just hear the lyrics. So that was one that I felt very much was inspired by that time period.
A glass of sweet vermouth. Would you believe me if I told the truth? Everyone's looking for someone to use. I don't want no one to touch me, no. Got to keep moving, it's my life, I can't lose it. A war correspondent, a wandering loser. Dreaming, 'cause this world is dangerous.
The World Is Dangerous, featuring Connor Oberst, a very waltzy song that mm-hmm. happens almost at the very end of The Past Is Still Alive. Alinda Segarra, our guest today on Shiro's, and I'm Carmel Holt. So where in the timeline did that tour happen? That was like during pandemic, right?
It was definitely past I don't know, we were on our like fourth variant or something, you know? So touring was definitely back. I'd already done my nationwide tour of Life on Earth. So that was the one that was really difficult because that felt like, wow, this is so different than what I'm used to, you know? But then I think it was a year after Life on Earth that we got to go on tour with Bright Eyes for like four runs, a really long time. It was really amazing.
Wow. Okay, so then you had another major turning point in your creative process.
Yeah.
A very sad one. If you'd be willing to tell us a little bit about your dad and how his passing intersected with this album and what it did for you, for your creative process.
Yeah, a month before I was scheduled to go into the studio with Brad, my father passed away very suddenly. And my dad was also a musician. He was a huge inspiration to me. I've had him on album covers. I've had him in multiple music videos. He was just a really big part of my creative life. He's the reason why I play music. So that experience was obviously life-altering. And suddenly, all these songs that I'd already written kind of took on a new meaning because I was already touching on these ideas of grief and love of people that you have to let go of, and a lot of like memoir style writing, looking back on my life. And when I lost him, suddenly the mission of the album became very different and very clear. But it was, you know, terrifying.
So can you expand on what that mission was and then filtered through that experience, what it became?
Yeah, before the passing of my dad, it just felt a little bit more relaxed of a, oh, I'm looking back on my life. You know, pandemic times were very hard on all of us. I'm thinking about times that I have a difficult experience honoring, you know, kind of playing around with ideas of memory. And then when my dad passed away, it was like everything got a lot clearer and a lot more important to me. Suddenly it became less of a, oh, these are writing exercises and this is an album that just feels very loose and casual. And then suddenly it became like, this album means everything to me and it is a grief album. You know, it's an album that is about how grief is also love. And that grief is about many different parts of my life. It's not just about my dad, but I think that's like when the central mission and theme became very clear.
It's so wild to me that this is probably the third conversation within the span of the past month that had this kind of exact trajectory, very
oh, wow.
different projects. Yeah. So first, I spoke with Carrie Brownstein and Corin Tucker
of course,
Sleater-Kinney.
Yeah.
And that was that whole crazy story.
Yeah.
Again, same thing. Songs were written. They were already starting to record in the studio. And then this tragedy happens and grief provided a whole new filter and a sense of urgency and a new landscape for that material. The next one was Kim Kranz, who did the Wild Unknown tarot decks.
Oh, wow.
She just put out an album and was also starting to work on material, lost a dear friend, then was propelled into making her first record in a decade. Now I'm talking to you. And it's just so interesting and also like really affirming that this is a universal thing and how we can transmute grief and how talking about losing loved ones and talking about loss and talking about trauma and how we work with it, how it gets transmuted. All of this is like really important stuff.
Yeah. And it feels for me, it feels like very ancient. It feels older than me. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really rooted myself in, because the loss of my father was for sure the most unmoored, like lost I had felt in so long. All of the defense mechanisms I had built of being a hustler and being a bit individualistic when it came to me taking care of myself and a workaholic, all these things suddenly did not work anymore. I think I'm so grateful that I have this practice of songwriting, that it was like the songwriting knew that I would need it or something. I was just so grateful that I was going into the studio. You know, I would think some people maybe would be like, I can't handle this, and that's totally fair. For me, I was like, if I didn't have this recording date, I would feel so lost in the grief, you know? So it was like my trajectory and my path as a songwriter, I was able to just kind of like float with it and to be like, I don't know, I don't have the tools right now, and I'm not in control. And I was able to rely on the form and the craft to carry me.
Can you take us into that process once you got back to Brad Cook's studio and the crew that he assembled to help usher the music into the album?
Yeah, it was a lot of time with just me, Brad, and the engineer, Paul. We really decided that the best way to go about it would be for everything to start with me. We talked about like the root of these recordings being me and my guitar and the song. And, you know, we did a lot of exploration with Life on Earth, and I feel really happy about it. And also, like, I'd like to do that again. But we knew from even before this happened that this record was about the song and about me at the core of it. And it didn't really need a lot, but it needed, the songs needed like the perfect little moment, you know, which is very hard to do, to capture the perfect magic moment. It's like, that'll take a life of practice, you know, which is what I think Brad is so amazing at, is creating the environment and not being afraid to let things happen. So it was mostly me, him, and the engineer. And then we brought in my drummer, Jan Westerlund, and also Phil Cook, who I've played with before, who's also happens to be Brad's brother, who's just, talk about a magic moment person. Like, it just flows out of him, you know?
Yeah.
And we brought in this incredible fiddle player, Libby, and also Matt Douglas on horns. And then I was so excited about Meg Duffy of Hand Habits that they came in and they played on many tracks on this record. They played on Hawk Moon. They played on Vetiver. Like, I'm such a Hand Habits fan and such a fan of Meg. I think Meg is one of the best living musicians that we have. So that felt like a dream moment for me to be in the studio with them. It was only for a day. I mean, the whole recording process was like 10 days. It was really fast.
Wow. Is that usual for you? Do you usually work that quickly in a studio setting?
In the past, I have, because of just like budget. You know, you're just like, I don't got a lot, so we got to bang it out now. but for Life on Earth, because we were so restricted with pandemic stuff and everything was so up in the air, it took us a couple of months. I had to go back to Durham a lot of times. So yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the work of this record was unblocking myself. I think that's like a underrated practice, is there's the work of practicing your craft, and there's also the work of getting out of your own way and letting it come out. And Brad is also a really great guide in that way. And I've said in other interviews that the grief made me so tired that I think I was just less combative in some ways, where he'd be like, that was it. And I'd be like, okay, you know, as opposed to, I think, but this part and da-da-da, you know, stuff like the perfectionist mindset was tired, which was really great. I'd love to make that part of my brain tired more. Because I think it just stops so much of the gold, you know, so much of the truth of us. Like, I don't want to hear people be perfect. And yet I hold myself to this standard.
I might also add to that, or even reframe that, thinking about moments that I've been going through loss and grief, and how it kind of like tenderizes you in this certain way. Like,
for sure.
Like, the tired is also a very kind of soft place. And
for sure.
it's like there's a certain part of your daily armor that you just put down because it's too heavy and it's not important anymore, you know?
Absolutely. That's like the main thing is that it's not important.
Yeah.
During that time, it felt like I could just see things differently, you know, like what was important and what wasn't worth it was so clear. And I felt that during the recording process of just this is worth my energy or I have a finite amount of energy and this is not worth it. And, you know, that I would normally stress about or worry about, I saw it like mattering in the time span of a life as opposed to just like a day. I'd be like, well, I'm not going to care about that when I go. So no, not today, you know.
Let's go to music again here. What song would come to mind as we're talking about that? Is there a song that you can guide us to that saw you really kind of put that down and just be more trusting and open and let happen what happened?
Yeah, I think Buffalo. This recording is magic to me. There's something about it that's like so relaxed. And I think in the past, I would have felt really hard on myself. Like, is this compelling enough? You know, just these ideas of, I hope that people like this, or am I doing enough work, kind of, you know, like, and now I see the difference of just telling a story and being your soft version of yourself and how much of a difference it makes.
Two moons and a raging river, saddled up by the pinon fire, drove out to the edge of the pueblo, bought a drum from a man who cried, and the children's shoes on the ceiling, and the way that you hold my hand, and I yelled and I didn't know the reason, but I knew that you'd understand. 2 weeks just to catch the buffalo, 2 weeks just to catch the buffalo. Some things take time, I know they do, some things take time.
That's track two on the new Hooray for the Riff Raff album. The past is still alive. Alinda Segarra, our guest today on Shiro's, and I'm Carmel Holt. I wanted to say before I forget, happy 10th anniversary to Small Town Heroes.
Yeah, isn't that wild? I keep making this joke on stage where I'm like, it's crazy because I'm only 27. Like, I can't believe. How did that happen?
Yeah, I also love that you timed the release of this record close to your birthday. I hope that that was deliberate.
I seem to do it every time.
You do. I know. Yeah. They're all Pisces babies. Yeah.
I know. I think it just makes sense for me to do it. Yeah. I know. I would love to look into the astrology of this one. Be like, what rising is the past is still alive?
So the album is a bit of a travelogue, a memoir.
Yeah.
I think back to Small Town Heroes. In fact, I mean, it's funny because little bits of your story have, of course, been a part of your work all these years. But this almost reads like a chapter book kind of a
thing. For sure. Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about that 10-year journey from Small Town Heroes to now. Talk to us a little bit about the memoir aspect of The Past is Still Alive and the story that it's telling.
Well, with Small Town Heroes, that was a really interesting time in my life because it was my first experience being signed to a label. My first record I put out on a label. I had been, you know, releasing stuff on my own through Kickstarter. And I was suddenly playing bigger shows, playing music for people that were not just my friends. And I felt an immense amount of responsibility. And I was doing interviews for the first time. It definitely made me a little bit fearful of becoming a spokesperson for like this community that I came from. I felt like I didn't know how to handle that responsibility yet. And so I was very weary of talking about it and also having the story become exploited, or I don't know. I felt very like I came from a world that was very sacred to me, this like punk DIY traveler, outsider artist world. So fast forwarding to now, I think my perspective on writing about that period of my life and where I come from is very different. It's become more of a documenting this time and these people and these places and movements that I feel like are really important and should be documented and should be remembered. And also, I just feel like I have a better grasp on my writing and my language, and I feel more empowered. I feel more like I know how to tell this story in a way that is honoring it, and it is not just giving it away and having, you know, whatever form comes out that's like the most profitable or something. I think I was very scared of that when I first came out with Small Town Heroes. So, you know, there's a book that was really influential to me while writing this called It Was Vulgar, It Was Beautiful by Jack Lowry. And it's a history of ACT UP and Grand Fury during the AIDS crisis and this artistic movement and how important it was. And reading it just really made me think about all these incredible artists, incredible people that we lost, and how important it is that people talk about them and talk about their work and their legacy. And that made me really think about this writing and how I want to talk about my friends that aren't here anymore. And I want to talk about Food Not Bombs and dumpstering and like the protests that we'd go to, because it should be remembered.
Yes, to all of that. What did you specifically end up mining here? Like, are there any stories in particular that we're hearing for the first time from you that, you know, you hadn't shared even in kind of a low-key way before?
Yeah, I mean, very specifically, I name-check this woman, Miss Jonathan, on Hawk Moon. That was a huge, just a very big character in my life, even though we only spent a short period of time together. I met her when I was 17, and I wasn't even playing music yet. I was still just like spare changing on the street, and got to New Orleans and met her. And we would like get drunk together and sleep in abandoned buildings together. And, you know, she was the first trans woman I'd ever met. And I felt so seen by her and so safe with her. And at the time, that traveler world was very homophobic and very violent. I'd yet to find this like more artistic musical community within it. So meeting her, it was just like a beacon of light, you know? And I'd been wanting to write about her. If you look in my journals, you'll see like years of me trying to put this relationship into words, and I just didn't have them yet. And then finally, I was able to do it on Hawk Moon, and it felt like the right timing.
And you never know the way I miss Miss John.
That's Hawk Moon from the new Hooray for the Riff Raff album, The Past is Still Alive. I have Alinda Segarra here on Sheroes, and I'm Carmel Holt. I'm so glad that you brought up Miss Jonathan and this song. And I mean, there's just so many layers of beauty in terms of what you're sharing here and being open about in a new way. And
yeah,
part of that is queerness.
Yeah.
And honoring your queer elders and heroes and sheroes. Talk to us a little bit, too, about that aspect of your work. And you mentioned, like, the crowds that you were running with in the Traveler days where there was a lot of homophobia.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's so interesting because we're living in a time right now where queerness is finally starting to feel more and more normalized, even though there's plenty of homophobia out there still to fight. So it occurs to me that also this is a moment where you might be feeling more at ease in that way and safe.
Yeah, it's really complicated because it's like it's become more normalized to talk about. And yet also at the same time, politicians are like making their entire careers out of being like obsessed with gender, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's such a like strange moment to hold both of those truths. But I definitely feel like in music, I've seen, you know, like such a big change. And I feel a lot more understood. Even doing press for this album has felt like I'm more understood as a complicated person with different identities. And then the experience of talking to press when I first put out Small Town Heroes is huge, you know? So I had this idea about like really documenting what I thought was beautiful, because I feel like we're told all the time by social media and just like by algorithms, like what we should be looking at. And we're told like what we like, oh, this is based off of what you like. So you're just being fed these images. And sometimes I'm like, I think you're feeding this to me because it outrages me actually, which is so unhealthy. And I wanted to just create a little space that was like, kind of like a crow, like collecting all these shiny things, being like, look at this. Here's Eileen Miles and here's Buzz Blur and here's us painting the oil cans in Philly. And here, you know, just trying to capture these moments and make a scrapbook. So that's where the song Colossus of Rhodes came from, because, you know, this was written, I think, a day after I had heard about the shooting in Colorado of Club Q, and just feeling, you know, this was an expression of grief, of just feeling so afraid and also so digging my heels in deeper into saying, I'm not going to be scared off. These are my people and this is who I am. And so I wrote this song just as a container of safety. It's like kind of like you get under a blanket fort, and it's like, here are just some beautiful things that I've collected in my lifetime, and I want to share them with you. And for about 3 minutes, you can feel safe.
Hold my head like a live wire. Duck quick, now I hear gunfire. Caught somewhere in the space between. Do you love me? Do you love me? Everything is advancing. I love to see you out dancing. There's women up in the mountains. We could be up there if we could get up there. Say goodbye to America. I wanna see it dissolve. I can't be your poster boy for the great American fall. Now I'm out and I'm prowling. You make me wanna start growling. You will live forever as this bombshell in my mind.
Colossus of Rhodes from the Past is Still Alive, the ninth album by Hooray for the Riff Raff. Alinda Segarra is our guest today on Sheroes, and I'm Carmel Holt. What about the sequencing of this record, too? Like, if you're trying to thread the needle through, can you give us a framework of time that this covers? Is this, like, actually, like, a slice of your life that has a definitive beginning, middle, end, or is it a little bit more fluid than that?
Well, the first track, Alibi, is me when I was probably 14 hanging out in the punk scene. So we start that early. And then, you know, there are songs like Snake Plant, which is a memoir within a song. And that starts out when I'm still a little kid and my aunt and my dad are driving me to Florida, where we used to drive to Florida every summer in a minivan. and then it goes all the way to really what I didn't know was going to be me saying goodbye to my father, but it goes very much into present day. I think The World is Dangerous is very much a present moment song for me, you know? Mm-hmm. And then Ogallala, which is how we end the album, is like the perfect ender because it's talking about me on tour driving through this tiny town that when I was 17, I like got stuck in and we couldn't hitchhike and we were getting picked up by the cops. And, you know, the lyrics are very true to life. And then I'm on tour with my band being like, you guys, I've been here before. And everyone's like, okay, like, we don't care. we need to go, you know, like trying to explain this moment of like, what do you do when all of your lives suddenly intersect at this crossroads? And you're just like, I don't know which one to take with me. I don't know how to talk about them. It was a very surreal moment.
Hiding from the cops in Ogallala, Nebraska. Getting dropped off on a county line. You were so mean, but I had to keep walking. We walked that state on Highway 30 time. And I was in love with my American footprint. Tracks of blood left out in the snow. Salt Lake Beacon burnt by electrical fencing. Half moon rising, headlights down.
I love that song. I actually have it highlighted here,
Cool.
The final track with Anjamil. So I love the lyrics that say, I used to think I was born into the wrong generation, but now I know that I made it right on time to watch the world burn with a tear in my eye. Like, wow. Yes.
Yeah. I used to feel so romantic about the 60s and the music then and the movement. And, you know, of course, I still get caught up in the romance of that because there's so much incredible art that came from that period. But right now, I feel more present than ever in being like, this is my time. I'm glad I'm here right now, even though it's such a terrifying moment. Even though we have no idea what the future of the planet holds and the future of our government holds, you know, I think there was a period of fear that I went through with, you know, the Trump election and then going into pandemic where my nerves were so fried and I felt this responsibility as an artist. And now I'm a little bit more like steel. I'm a little bit more like, okay, here we go. This is what we're in. This is the reality. I'm not so much in the, I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe this is happening. It's more of like, this is happening. So what are we going to do? You know? And I think that's a collective feeling that we're all having. We're a little bit more like, we need to depend on each other because apparently a lot of people in power don't listen to us. There's much more of a feeling of, how do we take power into our own hands? How do we work together? How do we build community? Because that's what's going to get us into the future. While also, you know, not denying the obstacles that we face.
You know, you started this conversation by saying, like, you've always known that this is what you were meant to do.
Yeah.
This is your calling. This is your purpose. Would you say that there's any kind of shift in terms of what that means now and what the mission is of your art?
Yeah, I think the gift that grief brought me was it freed me of this burden that I'd put on myself of responsibility as an artist to kind of carry movement or something or to inspire movement. I think that's just a really the wrong way to think about it, but it's not our fault. It's what we're fed that artists are supposed to, you know, be this like lone, like change maker and spark ideas and spark movement and like revolution.
Yeah.
And it's very isolating, and I think it's not good for us. And I think this experience of grief just really brought me back to, I'm just a person who needs my friends as much as anybody else. And also, like, all I can do is witness and document and be a part, however I can, of the movement that people are making all around me. There's, you know, growth and work that's being done all the time. So it just shifted my perspective on my responsibility. And it's such a more human way to look at it. Now I'm just like, I'm a human. I need my friends. I need my community. I need to eat food and I need to drink water and get sleep. And also, like, I want to be in awe and humbled by all the work that people are doing around me.
Since we're in the Shiro's world here, I wanted to touch on gender and music and your take on it, what you've seen shift, where we might do better. What just sparked that for me was you talking about the isolation of feeling that sense of responsibility.
Yeah.
And I feel like as women, as queer people, like, there is a little bit of extra there still.
For sure.
Because we're still dealing in a world that wants to separate us and put us in a scarcity mentality. There's like
for
less
sure.
slots or something.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really encourage collaboration or community per se.
Yeah. I definitely think there's, you know, there's been such a huge shift in queerness and in, you know, gender fluidity and also just like female empowerment in music. And I also think it can get co-opted and just manipulated really fast.
Yes.
But I also believe in the intelligence of listeners and artists who are like able to see it and be like, oh, it's happening there. It's happening. Mm-hmm. I see it. You know, but I think that's just, that whole process is exhausting in itself, to be like, oh, I see how I'm being sold. Oh, I see how this would make somebody, my, you know, success in one instance would make other people think like, well, there goes that slot, you know. So I think that whole process is happening all the time. And it can be so exhausting when you're like, I just want to be seen as a human being with an experience that I'm sharing. But I just feel really inspired by the artists that are happening now. I mean, this month alone, there's so many records that are coming out by, you know, either like non-binary or female artists that I just think like that's where I want to put my focus, is the inspiration. And it's really helped me with feelings of insecurity and fear, because I do feel them. I feel scared of like how aging will treat me, you know, like I know that that's a really painful process when you're in this industry. And I have my fear, but I just have really chosen to believe again in this feeling of like there is community out there and that's where the gold is, and shift my ideas of what success means. You know, like success to me means having a lot of peers that I'm just like, wow, you blow my mind. And I hope I can write a song as good as that one someday. And then like egging each other on to just keep searching and to keep growing.
What about in your collaborators? I still hear a lot of people coming here for interviews talking about the lack of visibility that show up on your short list of here's your next producer, here's possibilities for your next engineers, here's, you know, here's your crew, you know, that we still have some work to do in those arenas. And even in, you know, touring bands, you know,
for
who
sure.
are we going to get? And it's like, I wish I could get more women and queer people on my crew, but they're like
for sure.
a hot commodity and they go.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And also it's like, it's just such a long road full of so many like unhealthy and sometimes scary experiences. Like, I know that's what it was like for me. I remember when I first started this band, I would have to just be like, are you homophobic? Are you comfortable being around trans people? Like, that was a part of my interview process. And of course, like some people would just be like, what? No. But then like some people, you're just like, wait, you are. Like it was a whole painful process of finding like-minded people or just finding other people that I knew were like of my community. And there's so many barriers. There's class barriers. There's like, you know, just to get to this point where you're working and you're available for gigs. So I definitely think that is a huge place that we have to grow. And, you know, it's really complicated. I definitely think like class is such a, it's such a like secret thing that's happening. It's such a secret and yet huge part of what's happening in touring music in like that industry, because people that didn't grow up with, you know, a lot to fall back on, it's a very terrifying way to try to make your money. So I don't know. I think it's an interesting component that's like always going on.
I love that we're talking about it because that's not something that comes up very often, but the access to instruments.
Oh my God, even, of course.
You know?
And, or space. I mean, growing up, I grew up sharing a bed with my aunt, and it's like, no, I didn't play electric guitar because like I couldn't keep her up. You know, like I when I started to play guitar or tried to, it was an acoustic guitar because I was like, I need to be as quiet as possible, you know, just stuff like that. Yeah. And I think just like an honesty is better for everybody, like an honest conversation that could be like, oh, you grew up like this. Well, I grew up like this. That's different, you know? And I think it can just help people who didn't grow up with a ton of money, just not be so down on themselves about feeling like maybe you're behind the curve or something, or there's a goal that you haven't yet reached. It can really, at least for me, it helps me feel a little less crazy of like, oh, well, I had these obstacles and, you know, but there's still a success that I'm achieving that's really important to me. I think that's like the most toxic part, is the pretending that it isn't a factor can just be so harmful to people and so unnecessarily hard on themselves.
I mean, it's just like anything too that you carry with you, right? Like any like past traumas.
Totally.
Or, I mean, I think about Alison Russell all the time, openly talking about the abuses that she went through, unspeakable, what some of us might think are unspeakable abuses, you know, and that's become her work. And what she calls circle work is like sharing it to both, you know, get it out and not have it control her, but also not control
that's so
others.
Cool. She's such a genius.
She's so rad. Like, can't
even. That's such a beautiful way to express it. I think it's really important when you're doing that type of work and you're a public, you know, have some kind of public platform or are talking about these really difficult things, which I relate to. It's also just like a really important reminder that you deserve care and rest and that you deserve like the time to recover from that, because it is like an added job to just the making of the art, you know?
Yes. I don't even know who said it at this point, but just like the path to freedom lies on the shoulders of the oppressed or something.
Wow.
Like, there's this just kind of like additional emotional labor that comes with being brave enough and courageous enough to share your own experiences so that others can be free.
Yeah, for sure. Wow.
Just to bring it back to this record, I mean, even just saying that, you know, you used to eat out of the garbage and how
tender moment for me in the studio. For sure, the most vulnerable. And like, I brought that song to Brad just being like, I don't know if this is a song. I don't know, but like so scared. And I'm just so grateful that he was like, this is like you, this you have to do, you know? But singing that line, it felt terrifying to be that, you know, straightforward and like, this is where I come from. And I'm not trying to say anything other than this is just my experience. And that felt really scary.
And so how has it felt embodying that on stage?
It's felt really cool. I kind of see it as a moment of like love to my younger self every time we get to that line. And, you know, I don't even know if it feels that heavy for the audience. I think it's just kind of like a weird line for some people. And like, it goes by and that's totally cool. But for me, it's always like, ah, here comes the exposure. And it's felt like this moment of love and care to that 17-year-old kid being like, hey, you're gonna make it out of this. You're gonna survive. And just trying to like look that kid in the face and be like, one day you're gonna have a band. It's gonna be so cool. Like, you're gonna have all these friends. You're gonna have all these experiences and this like power finally. You know, I feel like I have some more power over my life. And that's really been the surreal, beautiful moments that I've had recently.
Man, this song, I mean, it's really kind of feels like a pinnacle moment in the album. It falls in the middle. I mean, just like what we were talking about before about privilege, you know, like they just want to tell me stories about the friends that they met in college and how famous people are their parents. And I always feel just like a dirty kid that used to eat out of the garbage. You know, it's just like, whoa.
I really wanted to capture that feeling of just like uncomfortability and also like not even of like shadiness or like judgment, just kind of being like, I just don't know what to do with all these wild ass stories that I have of my of like my time on the road, because I say it out loud and sometimes it's just like blinks as a response. And it's like over the years, I've learned to be like, OK, keeping that one to myself, like, you know, this record is really me learning how to be like, how do I own my story? How do I like tell these stories and be more grounded and comfortable with being like, if you don't relate to them, that's okay. You know, I don't have to edit where I come from if it makes somebody feel uncomfortable. That's like the major lesson I learned.
Nobody here really knows me. They just want to tell me stories about the friends that they met in college and how famous people are there.
Hourglass from the new Hooray for the Riff Raff album, The Past is Still Alive. We have Alinda Sagara here with us on She Rose, and I'm Carmel Holt. All right, can we do the She Rose magic wand?
Sure.
So with the wand, you hold the power to change anything in the music industry for women, queer folks, non-binary, basically non-males.
Okay.
If you held that wand, first wave of the wand, what would you change?
Okay, I would have free schooling in terms of like technical skills, in terms of like doing sound, producing, even like music school, just like very supportive and free education for all of these worlds. I would also have way more women and non-binary and queer people in charge of major like press outlets and also running record labels and being booking agents and being promoters. I would just love to see more of that in those very powerful and like also like they're kind of like the wizard in the Wizard of Oz. Like they're unseen, but they're such powerful positions. That's what I would do. Oh, also, I would make sure that we're all unionized.
Fuck yes.
And that we got fair pay and that we got health care. You know, that would be what I would do.
I love all of those wishes. May all three of those wishes come true. Alinda, it's been so awesome to have you here again.
Take us out
with a song, one of your favorites that we haven't played off the record.
Oh, I'm going to end it with Snake Plant, which feels like the right one. This is called Snake Plant. Also, The Past is Still Alive, and it's a memoir and a song.
Tattoo is a needle and thread. Most of our friends are dead, so test
understand there's fentanyl in everything. Don't become an angel with a broken wing. Oh, we need you back down here on earth, and nothing is as painful as birth. Well, time flies when you're getting old, but I was born with a baby boy's soul. Maybe someday I'll see you again in a field of war, a kingdom of sand, and maybe we could smile again. Oh, maybe we could dance again. I kiss your lips, I hold your hands. Oh, maybe we could dance again.
With thanks once again to Alinda Segarra. Thank you for being here on Shiro's. You're the best.
You're the best. Thanks for having me. This is such a sacred space. So thanks for creating it. Nothing will stop
me now. Many thanks once again to Alinda Segarra for being with us. The ninth Hooray for the Riff Raff album is called The Past is Still Alive, and it's available everywhere on Nonesuch Records. Catch the Met on tour this spring and summer. Shiro's is produced by me, is mixed and mastered by Kelly Drake. Our original theme music is by Lucius. Shiro's is also a nationally syndicated radio show. You can visit shirosradio.com to find out more and support our work with Patreon or merch from the Shiro shop. Keep in touch on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Carmel Holt, or find us at Shiro's Radio. And please consider leaving us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. That helps us grow and bring you more Shiro's. Until next time, remember, music is our superpower. I'm Carmel Holt. Thanks for listening.